always too much salt left around. And so I just wanted to let you know that there's other people out there who have the same concern that you have. I'm really interested in why we're using the same amount of salt when we have different snow level events. And I don't know if we can get into that now. And then my other, but we can maybe talk about it a little bit later if you want. St. Louis County, I'm wondering if MnDOT, how that relationship is going, because they have several roads, as well as the great organization of the MIC. How are y'all involved in that? So a couple of questions. I don't know if you can get to both of them. Or
they run. I can go pretty quick. I want to be respectful to the next folks. But so the St. Louis County and the state of Minnesota, St. Louis County is still kind of not in its infancy, but it's still very young. So they're kind of struggling trying to figure out what additives they can use to make a big difference. But we talk with their maintenance group. The state has a very, very state-like. They have a very regulated program, and they have the ability to use a lot of different additives, that potassium acetate, that chloride, that mag chloride. They have that because they have the equipment that's able to spread that. We do not have that equipment. Our equipment is old and it's outdated, and we're doing the best we can with it. But if we can get new equipment, then we can start branching out into those additives, which would overall lower our chloride usage. So that's where we have to concentrate on what we do. Is we're not able to do some of what those other people do because we don't have the appropriate equipment to do that. As far as your question on the amount of salt we use per snowfall, it
is the same amount of salt no matter what level of snowfall there is. And then maybe we can just have a conversation offline about the return on investment if we were to make those investments on the needs.
Sure. So we need to remember that what we're melting is we're only melting a quarter inch of the ice. We're melting the bonding that happened. When snow bonds to pavement surfaces, it bonds at about a quarter inch of ice, give or take. And the rest of it gets plowed off. So let's use the event that we had, there was 31 inches of snow. A quarter, maybe a half, because it got beat down and it created hard pan. Maybe a half inch in some spots. I'm sure there was more, but we scraped it up. So once we mechanically remove that snow with either motor graders or belly plows, we don't have those, but front plows on plow trucks. Once we remove that excess snow, then we put that treatment down. So that's why we're really only melting about a quarter inch of ice every time. So the more often we go out, the more often we run over on our salt budget. That's where it becomes such a social issue, because people expect to be able to drive all the time. And we can do that, but it comes at a very high cost, because that means when we get a dusting of snow, and if we waited 2 hours for the sun to come up, the sun would melt it off. But if we're out there for those 2 hours prior to that, we've put down 300 tons of material. So that's where we need to work on education and messaging. And once I get education and messaging, then I'll come. I have ROIs for you. However, I don't want to speak to them until I can get everybody to understand what we need to do. And then we can discuss the options. The education behind it is very important to me, because I don't want to ask for extra funding. And I don't want to tell you an ROI until you've asked all of your environmental questions, along with just understanding the entire process. Once you feel you are really comfortable with that, then I'd like to come back and ask for funding and an ROI.
Thank you. And thank you very much, Jeff, Ryan, and Chad, all for being here and for presenting today. I just wanted to say we've worked on getting this presentation on the books for a little while. Really happy to see that it happened. And I think the social component of that, the cost of our salting and the impact on water and streams, is very significant. And I think you explained a lot of that, but there'll be more questions and I'm sure further conversation too. So I think we'd be happy to have further presentations in the future. But in the meantime, I'm wondering, Clerk Denham, could we get the slides sent to us as well? Thank you. Awesome. Appreciate it.
Buddy, appreciate your time.
Hello, folks. We're going to start soon with the interview of Eric Jolsrud for the Spirit Mountain Recreation Area Authority. Hello, Mr. Jolsrud. Apologies for butchering your name the first time. My name is Azreen Owl. I'm at Large Counselor, and I'll be just running through some questions for this interview and then leave room for any questions from the council. Sounds good? Well, thank you so much. If you, before I even begin the questions, if you want to introduce yourself, just really quick to the rest of the council.
My name is Eric Jolsrud. I do know some of you here. I recognize some faces, so look forward to answering questions.
If you want to lift up the podium, I believe the buttons to lift up the podium is on the left, right?
Okay.
First question, do you have any personal or financial interest, direct or indirect, with the Spirit Mountain Recreation Area Authority board, or are you engaged with any capacity whereby a conflict of interest may arise?
Not.
Please give a brief outline of your educational and work experience and how your background experience will be of benefit in relation to the board.
I went to high school, graduated, went to college, St. Olaf and graduated, went to graduate school here at UMD in chemistry, and then got a master's degree, and then I worked as a maintenance man, worked as a teacher. I've worked as a medical physicist consultant, and I'm currently a medical physicist at radiation at Ascension Health and Radiation Oncology. I deal with lots of budgets, and I've been on a lot of other boards. I was on served two terms on a YMCA Camp Olson board that is very similar to board structure like this. I was 6 years on the Mr. Park Soccer Club board, and then most recently I'm just termed out of my role on the Duluth Cross Country Ski Club board as the treasurer.
You're terming out this year of that board?
Yeah, I termed out a year ago, but they needed me to hang out, so I helped out for another year.
Service. Why are you interested in serving on this particular board?
I think that SMRA is a fantastic resource to the community, and I want to make sure it remains viable and feel like I could do good work in helping them with that. I'm also an avid user of the facilities and activities that it offers. Avid skier, both Nordic and downhill. I participated in the Smash event this year, which was quite fun, trying to skip across the water on my skis. I failed, but it was still fun. I have attended weddings there and stayed in the treehouse cabins there. So I'm very interested in making sure it's a source for the city for the long term.
For your passion and also your advocacy for the board or the Spirit Mountain. Do you foresee any personal scheduling conflicts which may prevent you from attending the regular meetings of the Spirit Mountain Recreation Area Authority?
I looked at the website, and I think the meetings are on Thursday, the third Thursday of each month at Spirit Mountain. But if you actually look at the website, go down two lines, it says they're on Tuesday of every third month, and call to find out where they are. But I don't think I'll have a problem with either place, or either day or place.
What do you consider the personal strengths you would bring to the Spirit Mountain Recreation Area Authority?
Well, I'm personally passionate about SMRA and its total activities that it has. I work with very large budgets at the hospital, so I can understand financial implications of decisions as well.
You've answered this already, but if you want to briefly just mention, are you presently serving on any other boards or commissions? If so, which ones?
I am not currently. I just ended, but I have, as I outlined earlier, been on a bunch of other boards in the past.
Is there anything else you would like to add concerning your possible appointment to the Spirit Mountain Recreation Area Authority?
Only that I feel honored to be able to help out and be on the board.
So much, Eric. We do have one counselor in the queue for a question. Counselor Forsman.
Thank you, Chair Awal. Mr. Schultzer, thank you for your interest. I serve on the Spirit Mountain Board as well. I can tell you it's Tuesday, although certain members of the audience could tell you that we had a lengthy discussion about whether to keep the meeting at 5 p.m. or not, so subject to change on that. But I just wanted to ask kind of a philosophical question about Spirit Mountain. There's been a lot of talk over the last few years about the profitability or the lack thereof. More recently, it has been profitable, which is great. That's not necessarily the charge in the statute that enabled it, but what does success look like for you at Spirit Mountain and as a board member? Kind of how do you manage that dual charge of keeping it financially sustainable but fulfilling the mission? How would you think about that?
I would think about keeping it accessible to the community and as a resource to all the community, meaning the activities it currently offers are open but also affordable to the individuals, and determining how to manage that to keep it with a budget that can, allow that to happen.
Very good. Look forward to working with you.
So,
given that we're at time, thank you so much, Mr. Gelsrud, for the interview. The resolution for the appointment will be coming out not with this resolution, but in the coming weeks, I believe. So look forward to that. Thank you so much for interviewing and your passion for being serving on our boards and commissions. We're adjourned.
I believe it would be on the next agenda. Is that correct? Quite possibly. So 2 weeks from now. I think we meet again in June after this. So. We'll get started with the agenda session for. Like, we will start. Councillor Alstead is not here. So, Councillor Anderson, can you read in for Councillor Alstead, please?
Resolution 394, approving issuance of a temporary sale intoxicating liquor license to various licensees. Resolution 395, approving the permanent expansion of the on-sale intoxicating liquor license of various licensees. Resolution 396, approving the temporary expansion of the on-sale intoxicating liquor license of various licensees. Resolution 397, approving issuance of an on-sale intoxicating liquor license and Sunday license to Bali Asian Cuisine Incorporated. Resolution 405, authorizing a master intergovernmental cooperative purchasing agreement with Omnia Partners for the procurement of goods and services.
Councilor Anderson, is your hand up?
So no.
Any questions, councilors? Farewell. Personnel, please.
Item 7, Resolution 392, resolution confirming the reappointment of Blair Powells and Kevin Wu to the Citizens Review Board. Item 8, Resolution 393, resolution confirming the reappointment of Judy Gibbs to the Natural Resources Commission. Item 9, Resolution 416, resolution approving proposed amendments to the specifications for the existing civil service classification of aerial lift bridge supervisor. Item 10, Resolution 417, resolution approving proposed amendments to the specifications for the existing civil service classification of graphics coordinator.
I don't see anyone in the queue. Any questions, counselors? Before we move on, planning and economic development. Counselor Anderson, please.
390, vacating a portion of an unimproved platted alley lying adjacent to and abutting Lot 2 and Lot 11, Block 142, in Myers, rearrangement of Blocks 105, 106, 127, 128, and 142, in Duluth proper, 2nd Division, West 5th Street, between 19th Avenue West and 19 1⁄2 Avenue West. Resolution 407, authorizing a lease agreement with Cirrus Design Corporation. Resolution 408, authorizing a development agreement with the Duluth Economic Development Authority and Cirrus Design Corporation. If I may, President Kenny, I see Director Flea just here. I'm wondering if you could give us a briefing on what's going on with Resolutions 407 and 408, please, or Mr. Shuckman is probably prepared as well. Thank you.
President Kennedy, Councillor Anderson, resolutions 12 and 13 are, the first one is the lease. Formerly there was a lease for the land, and there was a lease for the building, so there were basically two leases in place. What this does is it takes the existing lease and puts it within the city's name, so it basically extends the lease going forward, but strips out the lease that Cirrus was paying for the building itself. And then 13 is really the development agreement, which kind of solidifies all the elements with the transaction that included the bill of sale, the EDA release for the federal lease on the incubator building, and then basically the requirements that we tied Cirrus into for the investment, both at the MRO and also with the employment, because the two actions really were interrelated, because when they secured the MRO and made that their innovation center, they're moving a lot of staff over from the building that's in the incubator space over to the new innovation center, and that frees up more manufacturing capacity. So it basically is the development agreement that ties for the transaction where Cirrus will sell the building, or the city will sell the building. Well, technically DITA is selling the building, but council approved the transfer to DITA, and now DITA will be able to execute the agreement with Cirrus for the transaction of the incubator space.
Great news just to see that Cirrus is continuing to invest and the city's continuing to partner with them. So we're just continuing to cross our T's and dot our I's. Thank you.
Any other questions? Councilor Forsman.
Thank you, President Kennedy. Resolution 419. Requesting Planning Commission evaluation of Unified Development Code UDC regulations related to vacation dwelling units in the RR1 and RR2 districts. And I can certainly elaborate on this if you would like. Thank you, President Kennedy. So this is a resolution that has actually been done for about 6 weeks, but for various reasons related to discussions that were pretty hot at the time relating to vacation dwelling units, and then seeing that there was an appeal related to the hotel project, which is similar. If you recall, there were two appeals originally. One was on environmental grounds, and one was on wanting to see certain property restrictions lifted. And that is what this one relates to. So what this resolution is doing is following up on that group of citizens and neighbors that simply wanted a review of their idea, which was in very unique circumstances where you've got a commercial district literally abutting a rural residential district, is there a potential at looking at doing some sort of vacation dwelling unit allowance there? So this isn't saying the council is supportive of that.
It is simply directing staff to work with the Planning Commission to evaluate it. And we worked with staff on writing this particular resolution. So this is in direct response to those citizens that came to us and did not file subsequent appeals, but had asked us to look into this. But I'm certainly happy to take questions if there are any. And I would just say thanks to the attorney's office for helping write this.
Councilor Anderson.
Kennedy. And thank you, Councilor Forsman, for the work to get this resolution here. Question that I have, and this actually came up for me over this last month, a couple of weeks or something, but you know, we're not addressing the form districts, and I'm just curious. So we have a resolution, or we have an ordinance now that there's no limit on the units that can be created in form districts, but I'm curious if would it be realistic to, maybe we need to do another resolution, but I'm curious, how many housing units have we lost in our form districts to vacation dwelling units over this last year, however long it's been that this, we've had this going on?
That for Mr. Schuckman, administration, or is it going from administration to planning?
Would it be feasible to include, to expand this study if we're asking the Planning Commission to evaluate the code for these two specific
R1 and RR2,
RR1. RR2 districts. Is it? Can we also get a summary of what's been happening in our form districts? Maybe we don't need a resolution for it. Maybe we could just request it.
President Kennedy, Councilor Anderson, I would maybe suggest that you and I chat to make sure I have a full understanding of what you're looking for. But we're happy to help provide whatever information you're looking for.
And I believe initially you were wondering if we could just add the form districts in with this this overview. And that would be a request of planning to evaluate, but also add the form districts. That would probably be a conversation with Councilor Forsman and Alstead. But depends on where you want to start, Councilor Anderson.
I don't want to dilute the work that's been done. So maybe just to say that I have some concern and question about the number of units that are being created in our form districts. And I would like to find out how many have been created, and specifically if they've been created specifically to become vacation dwelling units. But if there's, you know, apartments and houses that are in the form districts that are now all out, they're not available for long-term rental any longer. That's the number that I'm curious about.
You want to comment, Councilor Forsman, before we move on to Vice President Randorf?
Thank you. I don't think, oh, there it is. Thank you, President Kennedy, Councilor Anderson. I think what you're saying is fair and valid, and I would support evaluating the form districts too. I don't have any preference if it's part of this or if we keep it separate just for simplicity, but I'm hearing what you're saying and I understand totally. I'd say, obviously, this would not be subject to the form district exemption and would be a pretty unique circumstance, which is why I wouldn't even bring this forward if this wasn't very unique in terms of the scale that you could see this at. But just based on the information we have from planning, it's a pretty rare circumstance. You've got commercial right up next to residential.
So maybe would it be okay to have a friendly amendment to this resolution to ask that a study be done on the units that have been created in our form districts and the impact on long-term housing?
I am certainly open to that. Maybe we could talk tomorrow and loop in Councillor Alstead since she's also on this, but certainly happy to chat about doing that.
Thank you. I don't have added friendly amendments at an agenda session, maybe?
No, it would be for Monday. Yep, you're right.
Okay. Vice President Randorf.
Thank you, President Kennedy. And thank you, Councilors Forsman and Alstead, for bringing this forward. I remember the uniqueness of this because we do have just a small handful of RR1 and RR2 butting against mixed use or against commercial. Do you see this as, we know our form districts are unlimited, you would then identify these pockets and put those into the form districts so there could be, what do you think this will result in?
Thank you, Councilor Randorf. I don't see rezoning these areas. That certainly is not the intent. It would be whether we would open this up to be of possibility, I would say, so that the you remember the folks who are here, they said this is going to change their neighborhood, obviously, and if we were eligible to be putting our you know, hat in the ring here, we would like to see that. So as the council, we've delegated a lot of authority to the Planning Commission on this issue, and we all know it's complicated. So rather than come in with a resolution saying, yep, let's do that, we decided to work with them to say, let's delegate it to the Planning Commission to really look at it. So I don't have a particular preference. I have not promised the neighbors there's going to be any outcome from this, but this is their day to make their pitch, so to say.
Thank you. Not seeing any other counselors in the queue. Councilor Tominick.
Thank you, President Kennedy. Councilor Forsman, do you know how many houses this would affect?
Councilor Tomonic, I don't. We could certainly ask our friends in planning. Mr. Fulton's been very helpful on this, so I could ask him to re-look at that. It was not many.
Right. Thank you.
And I would just add one more thing. Certainly, if there's more questions, there's really no timeliness to this. This is not a super pressing thing that we absolutely have to do Monday. But so if there's amendments or whatever, we can talk more about it. It's already been delayed for a couple months just because we didn't want to insert this into the other conversations that were going on, because it could be easily confused for something it's not.
Thank you for that foresight. We will move on to Public Works and Utilities. Vice President Randolph will read in for Councilor Mayo.
Kennedy. On behalf of Councillor Mayo, item 15, resolution 403, is a resolution awarding a contract to Ulan Brothers, Inc. for the 2023 street preservation project, city project number 2016, in the amount of $3,455,243. Item 16, resolution 406, is a resolution accepting a permanent easement for street and utility purposes from Great Lakes Homes, LLC, over, under, and across real property in the Lincoln Park neighborhood for nominal consideration. Item 17, resolution 410, a resolution awarding a contract to Vite and Company, Inc. for the 2023 SIP sanitary lining project, citywide project 2106, in the amount of $1,911,548.
Not seeing any questions or hands up, we'll go on to public safety. Councillor Tominick, please.
Thank you, President Kennedy. Item 18, resolution 385, authorizing proper city officials to accept a grant from the United States Department of Homeland Security for driver training for firefighters in the amount of $42,040.90. Item number 19, resolution 391, authorizing proper city officials to accept a grant and execute a grant agreement with the state of Minnesota in the amount of $22,800 for hazmat training. Item 20, resolution 398, amending resolution 23-0106R and authorizing the sole source purchase of an access control system for the Hart District ramp from Interstate Development Partners, LLC, in the amount of $165,000.
Forsman.
Thank you, President Kennedy. Resolution 398. Just wondering if there's an update on switching from one ramp to the other.
President Kennedy, Councillor Forsman, this is an action that is on the agenda in part out of the question you asked when we first brought this through. Being mindful of that and the ongoing progress towards a potential development on that involving the two ramps. We have this item on the agenda with recognizing that that is possible. At the same time, we've also talked with the developer about the possibility of not moving this. And so I'm hoping to have more information on that ahead of Monday. And there's a scenario that I would ask us to get returned to the administration. But our focus is continuing the work to increase security in the ramps. And so we want to make sure that progress is happening on that front. And so more to come on that. But we are committed to moving that work forward in one of the three ramps that are in need.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to Recreation, Libraries, and Authorities. Councillor Forsman, could you read in for Councillor Hobbs?
Thank you, President Kennedy. I will read in for the absent Councillor Hobbs. Resolution 399, authorizing an agreement with Over the Hill Night Rider Snowmobile Club for the grooming and maintenance of city snowmobile trails at no cost to the city. Resolution 400, authorizing an agreement with Drip Toppers Snowmobile Club of Duluth for the grooming and maintenance of city snowmobile trails at no cost to the city. Resolution 401, authorizing acceptance of a Minnesota Department of Natural Resources Regional Trail Program grant for $250,000 for rehabilitation of snowmobile infrastructure in the Spirit Mountain area. Resolution 404, authorizing application to the U.S. Forest Service Urban and Community Forestry Program for a grant of up to $2.5 million to enhance Duluth's urban forest and provide pathways to environmental careers. Resolution 409, authorizing an agreement with TKDA for engineering services related to the design of Spirit Mountain snowmobile trails for a total amount not to exceed $54,473. Resolution 411, authorizing an agreement with TKDA for engineering services related to design of the Lower Spirit Nordic Center cross-country ski trails for a total amount not to exceed $59,100. Resolution 412, authorizing the sole source purchase of site restoration work from Environmental Quality Management Incorporated for a total amount not to exceed $64,900. Resolution 413, authorizing a contract with Rachel Contracting LLC for the Enger Golf Course earthwork improvements for an amount not to exceed $411,609.37. Resolution 414, authorizing a contract with Commercial Irrigation for the Enger Golf Course irrigation improvements for an amount not to exceed $4,646,619. And Resolution 415, authorizing a contract with MCI Flotronics LLC for the Enger Golf Course pump station for an amount not to exceed $283,561.53. And if I may, President Kennedy, I thought I would invite Director Philby Williams up to share more about the Enger resolution specifically with the council.
Councilor Forsman, thank you for the question and the opportunity to talk about this exciting project. The Duluth Public Golf is an essential part of our Duluth Parks and Recreation program, an essential way that we fulfill our mission. Duluth Public Golfers are like almost all of our users across the park system, working people. They're working people who cannot afford to golf at private clubs, but want and need the opportunity to be active in a beautiful place with friends and family. And this is, for many of our golfers, the most important way in which they find that in their lives. And so we're very pleased today to be able to bring forward three different contract approval resolutions that promise to enable us to continue providing a high-quality public golf experience on a reasonably affordable basis, on a financially sustainable basis, not just for this generation, but for future generations. This is the first, we anticipate about $10 million of, at minimum, of total essential capital investment necessary to fully reset all the critical infrastructure systems. We hope to do that in three steps over the next few years. This is the first of those three steps. It would provide substantially replace nearly all of the existing irrigation system. It'll provide new pumps, new control system, new water storage facility, and the pipes and sprinkler heads on 18 of the 27 holes. We don't immediately have the funds to replace the pipes and sprinkler heads on the last nine, but we have reasonable hope of getting to that point in fairly short order. I've been asked why we should be excited about irrigation and why golfers should be excited. Golfers, like living grass. And our golf course too often now has dead grass because most of our irrigation system is both non-functioning and non-repairable because of its age. So this really is essential to not just addressing deferred maintenance, but to provide a really high quality experience. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Councilor Wall.
Orsman, thank you so much for giving the explanation. I think this is, I agree that we need different recreational sports and activities throughout the city, especially ones that are affordable or accessible to constituents that otherwise might not be. So really excited for this project. I did have a question coming from a constituent on how the funding was working. I know we have previously allocated through different resolutions, but I was wondering if administration could just give a quick rundown of how where the funding sources are coming from.
President Kennedy, Councillor Al, the funding is coming from four places. $5.5 million for the three, the sum total for the three contracts, $2.5 million of which to be sourced from American Rescue Plan Act funds designated for local government revenue replacement, $2 million of bonding that would be financed by golf profits, future golf profits, $0.5 million from undedicated excess 2022 tourism tax receipts, and $0.5 million from general fund reserves.
And all these contracts coming forward with us is in the phase one of the three phases for the golf course?
President Kennedy, Councillor Howell, that's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Tominick.
President Kennedy and Director Philby Williams for being here. Is it appropriate to ask a question now about what kind of maintenance is still being done at Lester, or would you rather just concentrate on anger? Just an update.
President Kennedy, Councillor Tomonic, I'd be happy to answer any and all questions you may have. This is pertinent to Lester. the council passed a resolution in 2019 expressing the city's intent to temporarily reopen Lester Park Golf Course, or 18 holes there, for the one-year period of most intense construction at Enger. That was originally anticipated to be this year, 2023. It's now going to be 2024, and Mayor Larson wishes to follow through on that and intends to follow through on that commitment. To that end, we have been performed, even though the golf has not been publicly accessible at Lester for the last couple of years, we've been continuing to perform minimum maintenance to allow us in 24 to reopen it one more time and provide a reasonably high-quality golf experience. The conditions likely won't be to the exact same standard because this course has been kind of out of use for a few years, but we are hopeful that they will be satisfactory and people can really enjoy the course.
Councilor Forsman.
Thank you, Director Philby Williams. And I know that inflation has certainly taken its toll on what this project was envisioned to be back 3-4 years ago when we came to the conclusion that Enger should be invested in. And we are breaking this into multiple phases. Can you remind the council about what we would do with any sales proceeds from the Lester Park Golf Course and how that could potentially be used in the future as well?
Yes, President Kennedy, Councillor Forsman, as directed by the City Council on two occasions and affirmed by Mayor Larson, it remains our intention to dedicate to sell a portion of the former Lester Park Golf Course, or to have DITA sell it on our behalf, for 100% of its independently appraised value, and to dedicate 100% of the proceeds of that sale to reinvestment at Enger. And that's one of three reasonably promising potential future sources of revenue that give us a hopeful path to complete renovation within a few years.
And Separate question. There's a line in here about how obviously when you go from 27 holes to 18 to a course that has financially performed better historically to a course that has not performed as well in 2024, is this building in enough to cover that projected loss to the golf fund, or is that separate?
President Kennedy, Councilor Forsman, this just provides for the capital costs. It does not provide for the fairly commonplace occurrence where business revenues from a given facility are diminished during a major construction project. Those will have to be covered through operating budgets.
Very good. I assume so, but thank you.
Councilor Anderson.
Thank you, President Kennedy, and thanks, Mr. Philby Williams. I have several questions, please. One, I think this is the one that is, well, a question. On resolution 414, $4.6 million plus bid, we only have one contract, one bidder on this. How can we justify putting out that kind of money, and it's a huge chunk of change on a contract that only had one bid on it?
President Kennedy, Councilor Anderson, thank you for the question. Obviously, we want maximum competition to drive as much value for our citizens as possible. This is actually the second time we have gone through a full bidding process because that matters so much to us. Earlier this year, we went through a bidding process, received just one bid, and were uncomfortable proceeding on that basis. So we rebid it, and that's what you're seeing the results of now, providing a much longer period of time for bidders to respond and resolving some issues in the original bid documents that we thought might be presenting and inhibiting some bidders. Unfortunately, having gone through those extra steps, we still just got one bid. We did have pre-project engineers' estimates for the cost of the project, and these are close to those pre-project engineers' estimates. So while we would have liked more competition, we also don't see specific reason to believe that we are paid excessively for this scope of work.
Is there any... I mean, I know that you and your staff are nothing if not thorough in your work, because that's proved by the things that have been accomplished over many years. And you know, if we looked around, you know, a five-state region, there must be other companies who are doing this work. Is it possible to reach out to them and say, what was it about this bid that you're not doing this? You know, is there any way? Because it just, I'm still really just... It's not sitting well at all.
President Kennedy, Councilor Anderson, the engineer we engaged was specifically a Gulf irrigation engineer and Gulf irrigation consultant who we engaged in significant part because of their extensive national connections to contractors in this industry. Following the failed first attempt at bidding the project out, we did ask him to reach out to and proactively court bidders across the country. And I am confident that he did that. One of the challenges I understand is that, as is the case with so many industries, there's now an up to 2-year delay on delivery cycles between ordering and receiving equipment. And so there were many bidders who may have been interested, but who couldn't bring the equipment, secure the equipment necessary to do the job.
Forgive me if I can jump around a bit, but can you give us an idea of the anticipated costs of opening Leicester next year? What's going to come out of our general fund or wherever it's going to come from to pay for Leicester next year?
President Kennedy, Councilor Anderson, the We've been generating about $150,000 per year profit from golf operations since we closed Lester. The cost that we will incur in association with Lester operations next year will essentially be the operating loss to the golf fund next year, which we anticipate to be significant. $600,000 is our estimate, and it's a difficult estimate to produce with great precision.
Understood. And then just to confirm to, so I know I just want to acknowledge that this conversation has been going on for years, and this is a critical point in this discussion, it seems to me. This project, the scope includes the first 18 holes. You said you anticipated that to complete the project, you know, and anticipating maybe that we get it done in the next few years, that we come up with a funding source, that we sell land at Lester, that the total project would somewhere be in the realm of $10 million, so another $4.5 million. So thank you. I think I have a couple of questions for Mr. Shuckman. Mr. Shuckman,
could we have you pause? We have other counselors in the queue, and I'd love to get to them, and then we can come back to you. Thank you. Let's go to Counselor Tominick first. You got out of the queue.
Yeah.
You're next. Thank you. Thank you, Counselor Anderson.
And Kennedy, I would like to revisit for just a minute, Director Philby Williams, the sale of Lester, nine holes. So you said that we're waiting to see what the fair market value of selling it will be. What I've heard is that because of the high cost of bringing utilities into that, and then if the sale is at a fair market value, that that's going to be prohibitive for almost any developer to go in there. So I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that, whether the city is looking to sell it for less than that so that we can get some more housing built and so that we can start not only having more housing but also generating tax from that, you know, property value. And then I have a follow-up question about RFPs, but let's answer this one first.
Kennedy, Councilor Tomanek, I'll start with that question. I think what we are working toward is an RFP likely for either late June, for mid to late June is what we are targeting. Certainly you're calling out a key question, which is how do we balance incentivizing someone to develop that site and also protect the city's interests? And that is part of what we need to work through as part of that RFP. Our goal certainly is to sell any property that the city owns wherever for as much as we're able to, so that we recoup the public investment if there is one, or protect the public interest where there is one. And so I don't know that we have a firm answer for you on what that looks like, but that is exactly the question that we will be evaluating as part of the RFP.
Thank you.
President Kennedy and Councilor Tomanek, if I may elaborate. I would also wish to reassure you that we are not at all counting on the proceeds of this sale to magically materialize in an amount sufficient to finish our project. That is just one of three reasonably promising sources of potential revenue in the next couple of years that just happen to not be available right this moment. The other two, which are arguably more important, are one, we could, it appears that the legislature is very likely to renew the half and half tax for the new purpose of reinvesting in sports infrastructure. As your fall 2022 resolution indicated specifically, improving the quality of our golf courses, in council's view at the time, was one legitimate use of those funds. We have promised to you that we would go through some additional engagement of you and the community at large before proposing any specific expenditure from that potential funding source, and that remains our promise. So we're not proposing to draw on that immediately, but we may at a future date ask for your input and the community's input on that possibility. And then third, there's the possibility that we might borrow additionally with the intent to finance the additional borrowing from Gulf profits. We feel like Gulf-funded borrowing of $2 million is the appropriate and prudent level in association with this improvement, replacing the irrigation system. It's my view that when we get to replacing the clubhouse, that may provide sufficient additional boost to golf business performance that we would be able to borrow incrementally more for that purpose.
Thank you. We do have Vice President Randorf.
Thank you, Mr. Philby Williams. I just want to follow up on a question that Councillor Anderson asked because I wasn't quite tracking on the answer. We've been talking about reopening Leicester for just that one season, right, while we're doing the irrigation. And the question is what will it cost us to get those greens and grounds to an acceptable level? And I'm understanding that your explanation is there's going to be $600,000 worth of revenue loss from anger, right, potentially? And what is that amount to get the greens and the grounds to a level we need to? How much will we have to put into Leicester to make it golf ready?
President Kennedy, Councillor Randorf, that $600,000 figure is the joint product of our expectation that Leicester Golf would produce less revenue than would our normal anchor operation, and our expectation that reopening Leicester will have a one-time unusual cost. That one-time unusual cost, I'll have to get back to you on a specific figure. And I will do that in the next day.
We didn't open Leicester at all. That $600,000 is the loss if Leicester opened. If Leicester didn't open, what is the anticipated loss of revenue to have Enger closed for that season or that year?
President Kennedy, Councillor Randorf, an alternative that would provide continuous public golf throughout 2024 would be to direct the irrigation system contractors to perform their work such that at all times at least 18 holes would be open. And if we were to do that, the projected loss would be comparatively small.
Is there a reason we're not doing that?
President Kennedy, Councillor, Vice President Randorf, I think we take seriously the pledges that we made, that you made, that our Parks Commission made in your 2019 resolution to proceed with good intent to reopen Leicester in 24 as indicated. And I'll maybe let CIO Schuckman elaborate if he wishes.
President Kennedy, Vice President Randorf, I think that is well said by Director Philby Williams. The administration has been following the path that was set by the 2019 and 2021 council resolutions related to golf. And so we are working to fulfill those commitments that were made by both the administration and the council at the time.
Let's go to Councillor Tominick, and then we'll check in with Councillor Anderson after.
Thank you, President Kennedy. I want to follow up on Councillor Randor's question. $600,000 is not quite two levy points. Am I correct?
President Kennedy, Councillor Tominick, it is under that, and it would be a one-time expense.
Right. Well, I understand that. But if the golfers are already used to not golfing at Leicester, They've already found alternate places to golf. Is there any way to poll the golfers in our city and say, are you going to go back there for a year? Or if we saved the entire city 1.5 points on the levy, would you be willing to just play at Anger where you're going to be anyway? It just seems like a lot of money for 1 year.
President Kennedy, Councilor Tomanek, I think that that is a conversation we can certainly have. It is not part of the conversation or the resolution tonight, which I think you are tracking. And so I think that is likely a bit premature of a question and also one that we can certainly have more conversation about. At this point, the administration continues to follow through on the commitments that we all made in 2019 and 2021. But also, we feel it's important to be transparent when asked about what that cost would be to fulfill that commitment. And so I think we can have more of a conversation about that and determine the best way to move forward if we're going to have that conversation.
So what would be the route that the council could take? Could the council write a resolution that we were not going to open Lester because that would allow for public discourse? It would allow for our constituents to weigh in, and it would allow for an equitable way to decide whether we're going to what we're going to do.
President Kennedy, Councilor Tomanek, it's possible Director Philby Williams would have a handle on how we would bring through a resolution approving that reopening of Lester for council approval. It's also possible that the council could act in the way that you're describing. We have not gotten as far as thinking through the mechanics of what that looks like, in part because we have to put these three resolutions forward, move on them, and then move to the next phase. So certainly we can have that, you and we can have that conversation offline. And if the council chose to act independently, that's certainly something that you have that is within your purview to do. But we are not prepared at this point to bring anything forward to fund that Lester reopening. And so I don't have a solid answer for you at this point.
Councilor Anderson.
Thank you, President Kennedy. Mr. Shuckman, another concern that comes up for me around this is the $2.5 million coming from the American Rescue Plan Act funding. When I asked the question at our last meeting or last agenda session, and I was given the answer that I believe that we had $38,000 left of American Rescue Plan funding, was that assuming that this resolution was going to be approved? So there's $2.5 million out there plus the $38,000.
President Kennedy, Councilor Anderson, Director Carlson's here and can speak with more authority than I, but my understanding is that this money is coming from the capital line that the council approved in ARP funding plans. And so city capital expenditures. That $3 million is very helpful and also a drop in the overall bucket of city capital needs between facilities, vehicles, and equipment. And so this is our opportunity to utilize that funding without, to Councilor Tomanek's point, putting it on the levy in some form. And so this is a way to do that and not pass that cost directly on to property taxpayers and also move on the project in the shorter term. And I'm going to look to see if Director Carlson wants to either correct anything that I've said or add to it. It looks like she does.
President Kennedy, Councilor Anderson, just to clarify, the $3 million is in the 2023 budget that council approved. So if you remember, we budgeted $3.245 million in ARP funds, $245,000 was going to go towards operations, $3 million towards one-time capital. So it's all built into the $105 million general fund budget. Of that $3 million, this will take $2.5 million of it, leaving us with $500,000.
Thank you. Mr. Shuckman, can it would so I'm just trying to get myself wrapped around this, as you know. Could we take that 2.5 million and would it be an invest in equipment to deal with the chloride situation? Would that be something that we could use these funds for?
President Kennedy, Councillor Anderson, my understanding is that we do have that flexibility with these funds. Taking the funding from this proposed use would mean a equivalent hole in the proposed next steps for golf. And so as with decisions that the administration makes and the council makes at all times, we are balancing competing and significant needs across the organization and across the community. And so if these resolutions are not moved forward, then we would certainly work to find another way to spend that money rather than turning it back to the federal government. But our capital needs are significant, and we need to make decisions about those. And in this case, we have the opportunity to use federal funds to offset the direct impact to the organization and to property taxpayers. And if we don't do that, we have plenty of needs to address, and golf will remain one of them. And so it's a question of what comes first and what comes after that.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, President Kennedy. I have a question. If we have any idea of what percent of Duluth residents are golfers?
President Kennedy, Councillor Tomanek, I will get you a number tomorrow.
Also, do we track the zip codes of people that golf at our golf courses?
President Kennedy, Councillor Tomanek, we do.
Can I get that information too?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. And have we ever directed Belmont Partners to make a push towards golfers in the Twin Cities? Is that part of their advertising program?
And Kennedy, Councillor Tomanek, to my knowledge, we have not explicitly made that push. I think to Director Philby Williams' point, at this point, that would be a premature push given the condition of our courses. And certainly, were we to get to a place of anger being what we hope it will be, that is something that I think we would be excited to talk about. At this point, I wouldn't recommend it.
Councilor Awal.
Thank you, President Kennedy. I'm curious on average, what is the revenue and the profits coming out of anger? And after all, phase three is done, what is the projected?
President Kennedy, Councilor Owl, as I indicated earlier, the average profit over the last couple of years has been $150,000 a year, which is quite a turnaround from a decade ago when we were losing $200,000 to $300,000 a year. We are disinclined to make bold projections of big jumps in profits, much less to bond against that possibility. But I think there's reason to be confident that with a new clubhouse, with grass, that we might enjoy another $100,000 bump.
Councilor Forsman.
Thank you, Director, or first President Kennedy, then Director Philby Williams. Is it fair to characterize the vast majority of golfers at Anger are likely Duluth zip codes?
President Kennedy, Councilor Forsman, I think the vast majority are Duluth area zip codes. There was a time when I think Anger Golf Course in good repair is a tourist destination. Not too long ago, it was ranked among the top 100 public golf courses in America and really drew people. And so it has good bones. It continues to have the potential to be a great tourism draw, but in its current repair, as CIO Schuckman indicated, it's simply doesn't come up to snuff.
I'm not seeing anyone else in the queue. Any questions on any other items, councilors? That is the end of our consent agenda. Any comments or anything? And then I just want to remind you that 6:45 Monday, we have a personnel committee, planning commission interview. Mr. Shuckman.
Thank you, President Kennedy. I just want to note, Clerk Denham has reminded me that we neglected to put a resolution in related to the Spirit Mountain Board appointment, and we can have that added to the agenda tomorrow so that you're able to vote it on Monday. If you'd rather wait until the next meeting, that's certainly just fine, but we, in a normal circumstance, would have that on your agenda, and so we, with your permission, we would be happy to add that tomorrow.
I think it just makes sense, since we did the interview already, to follow it up with a resolution. Rather than waiting, it would be another 3 weeks until our next agenda session and then another 2 weeks. So we're looking towards the end of middle of June by that point. I think it might just be more efficient just to have the resolution.
Considering the timing, I would agree. It just gets a little cumbersome when we do that, but we'll work through it together, correct? And we'll have that amendment on our Monday meeting. Councilor, our Vice President, Randor.
Thank you so much, President Kennedy. I just want to make an announcement on behalf of the DITA commissioners that are on this council. That's Councilor Forsman, Councilor Tominick, and myself. This Tuesday, we'll be having a special DITA meeting, and we'll be looking at four items. One of those items that we wanted to make sure that the public and the councilors knew about is a resolution terminating the development agreement, the TIF note, and the minimum market value assessment agreement for Lincoln Park Flats, owned by Duluth Lincoln Park One LLC. So discussion will happen, and I believe a vote will take place on Tuesday. That meeting is at noon. It's a special meeting live here in chambers.
Thank you for that. Can we have the clerk send that out to councilors if they? Thank you. And then can you let us know if there wouldn't be any quorum issues if more than four of us showed up? Public meeting? Yeah. Very good. I don't think you are on.
Sorry. I think it's fine if other counselors show up to observe the meeting.
Very good. Yes. If you could send that out, Clerk Denham, that'd be great, to our email. Mr. Shuckman, you were... All right, counselors, if there's nothing else, we will adjourn, and we'll see you on Monday at 6:45.